Welcome to the Real Estate Espresso Podcast, your morning shot of what's new in the world of real estate investing. I'm your host, Victor Menashe. This is the weekend edition where we interview notable people from the world of real estate investing. Today is no exception. We have a great guest all the way from Northern Utah. Welcome to the show, Max Hansen.
Thank you, Victor. It's a pleasure to be here today with you.
Well, great to have you here. Well, Max, you've been at this game for quite a while, trained as a lawyer, and we will not hold that against you. No lawyer jokes on this podcast.
I know all the lawyer jokes.
Perfect. You've become a real specialist in 1031 exchanges as an intermediary. But before we dive into those details, maybe give a little bit of your backstory and how you got to this point in your journey.
I was born and raised on a ranch in southwestern Montana, spent most of my childhood in Montana, went off to law school, University of San Diego, graduated there in 76, went back to Montana and started working in a small town firm, Dillon, Montana. And I started doing exchanges back in 1978 and gradually started seeing more of those types of transactions as a transactional attorney. And I formed my own exchange company in 1991, American Equity Exchange, and grew that company and then ended up selling the company to Accruent in July of 2018. And I've been with Accruent ever since as managing director. Some of my employees came over with me to Accruent. They're still there with Accruent. And we've really enjoyed that being part of that organization. It's a great, great qualified intermediary company. Specializes in 1031 exchanges all over the United States, its territories, and some taxpayers in foreign countries that are doing exchanges in foreign countries too.
And there was a major press release that came out just recently.
Yeah, as of today, about noon, Accruent has become part of the Millennial Trust Company organization. We're very excited about that new synergy. Millennial Trust Company has clients all over the world. Works with them on alternate investments, 401ks, self-directed IRAs. And our hope is that we're going to be able to bring our expertise in the 1031 exchange industry to their clients, and also our great group of clients and referral sources throughout the United States and around the world.
That's fantastic. Now, our listeners are a sophisticated audience. They all know what a 1031 is, and they are all familiar with, you know, the statutory limits, the 45 days, the 180 days, and so on. But there is nuance in that. It's not just as simple as two dates on a calendar. What are some of the more typical pitfalls that you see even experienced investors fall into?
Well, with regard to identification and acquisition of replacement property, I think one of the biggest pitfalls I've seen in the last couple of years has been lack of inventory. There's been a kind of a dearth of really good quality replacement properties out there. And I think that when people end up getting their relinquished property under contract for sale and end up getting to the closing, they're kind of focused on that. So when the closing takes place on the relinquished property sale, that starts the 45-day clock ticking on the identification and process for the replacement property. Once they switch focus from the relinquished property to the replacement property acquisition and identification, they find out that sometimes those replacement properties are hard to find, especially good quality replacement properties. The real key is to have those people start looking even before they sell their relinquished property, start looking around, getting advice from qualified realtors and other advisors on what types of property may work for them, because many of them are making a shift from their own properties that they get up and every morning wake up and deal with that property and make decisions with regard to that property to actually acquiring properties that don't require their active management and control. And they're looking to other people to provide that expertise for them. So I would say the biggest advice I give to people that are looking to do an exchange is start looking around for that replacement property as quickly as you can and start getting good advice and finding out what's out there in the marketplace so that when that 45-day clock does start ticking on the sale of the relinquished property, you're already forewarned and forearmed, certainly, and in a better position to make some good decisions with regard to the ultimate acquisition of the replacement property.
Well, if I think about even our own due diligence process, 45 days goes by in a heartbeat. You would be very hard-pressed, even if you knew the property on day one of those 45 days, to get through a proper due diligence in that time frame.
Yes, because that's exactly right. The 45 days just goes by like a flash. People get down to the, you know, to the end of that 45-day period, and they start to panic. And that's really an opportunity for them to make some bad decisions with regard to what they're acquiring. The problem then becomes, too, you know, if they haven't embarked upon some at least initial due diligence, they're going to have to identify replacement properties that they haven't done due diligence on. And then after they get out past the 45 days and they're locked into that identification that they've made, they find out then there's issues with the properties they've identified. They don't feel comfortable with the acquisition. Unfortunately, they don't have the ability after day 45, midnight of day 45, to go in there and make some new identifications. So there's, like you say, a lot of nuance to the identification process and the ultimate acquisition process.
Now, let's talk for a moment about what happens in a scenario where the replacement property maybe has a development component to it, or there is debt associated with the 1031 that maybe that debt isn't placed day one in the property because maybe those improvements aren't even completed. Maybe those improvements are happening as part of the project. Are there any requirements, any timeframes that those improvements have to be done by, or you end up disqualifying the 1031?
The taxpayer is going to have to acquire their replacement property by midnight of day 180 from the date their relinquished property closes. So if they're in a situation where they're acquiring a property that's still under construction, obviously, they have to have exchange value incorporated into the real estate, into the ground by day 180. And that can be problematic. We've seen that a lot in the last couple of years also. Pandemic, supply chain issues, problems with finding employees for contractors. Typically, somebody enters into a contract, or many times somebody would enter into a contract for purchase of a property that's still under construction. They find out on day 170 that the main finished carpenter for the project, you know, has been out with COVID, been on life support. Or there's problems with all the plumbing supplies got stuck in a port down in California. They can't get the product complete. And that's another cause for panic, unfortunately. In some instances, taxpayers can enter into what we call a reverse exchange or a parking arrangement. Many times, if a taxpayer knows in advance of closing on the sale of relinquished property that they want to acquire a property that's going to have to involve some construction or development, permitting processes take a long time, much more than anticipated. What they can do is and we do these a lot, we'll acquire the property. Our company will acquire a property or have one of our entities set up to acquire the property and jumpstart the development process and the construction process, so that the taxpayer knows when they pull the trigger on the sale of their relinquished property, they're within 180 days of having the value in the ground on that new piece of property. I call them specialty exchanges. Those parking periods in the past have lasted, you know, anywhere from a couple months to a couple years, depending upon the scope and complexity of the construction project and the development project. We've seen a lot of situations involving permitting for just the development phase, the plans and specs, you know, where they're 6 months, you know, 9 months, maybe a year out from even getting the entitlements on a property, which is very problematic when a taxpayer is looking to acquire that property as part of their 1031 exchange process.
Is there a scenario where sometimes you're just better off paying the tax?
There may be some situations where you're better off paying the tax. I can't tell you how many times I've heard advisors say, well, you might as well just go ahead and pay the tax, because the tax rate is never going to get any lower than it is today. I've heard that for the last 30 plus years. At the same time, you see people that sometimes have properties that they've inherited, have zero basis. The generations before them that own that property and passed it on to them work 365, 70 days a week, 24 hours a day to build up that investment portfolio. and you've got a real hefty tax associated with that sale. There are some other opportunities too. If a 1031 exchange doesn't work on all or part of the transaction, you know, you've got situations where taxpayers could perhaps invest in opportunity zone funds where they do get some deferment of tax, but they don't get the 100% deferral of tax like they do in a 1031 exchange. We also see situations where there's a personal property adjunct to a sale of real property, or there is maybe some leftover funds that could be used for improvement of other properties the taxpayer has, that they could utilize that cash boot to acquire a property or to engage in some capital improvements on those properties, get some immediate expensing benefits or some other type of bonus depreciation perhaps. So there's a lot of nuance to that too.
Absolutely.
But those are just some things to think about. I'm a great fan of 1031 exchanges. I've spent the last 20 plus years on Capitol Hill and before various state legislative entities, you know, arguing about the benefits of 1031 exchanges and why they shouldn't be eliminated from the tax code or repealed. Personal property exchanges were repealed in 2017, but fortunately, 1031 exchanges for real estate remained. And the reason it remained is because it's been around part of the tax code since 1921, because it's such an effective tool for not only individual taxpayers as far as deferral of tax, but a great economy builder. I mean, it's a great pillar of our general economy. There's a lot of unfortunate impacts would be, I think, by the economy in general if 1031 exchange went by the board, as some people would like to see happen. We used to see that 1031 exchange might come up on the legislative roster maybe once every 10, 15 years. And we've seen that over the course of the last 30 years or so. But now it seems like every year it's in the crosshairs. The current administration's budget is just one example of that, you know, where they'd like to cap annual deferral of tax to $500,000. And that would have a pretty major impact on a lot of people that invest in real property.
Absolutely. Before we wrap up, let's talk a little bit about development. Because when you're developing land, there's a transition that goes from capital gains treatment to trading in land, which is subject to ordinary business income. And without getting into tax advice here, because that's not the role of this show, and you're not an accountant, where is that line? Where is that distinction? And it doesn't have to be a bright line. It can be a fuzzy line, if you will.
And that it certainly is. There's no real bright line test. When a person acquires a property as part of a 1031 exchange, they must have a bona fide intent to hold that property for productive use in a trade or business or for investment purposes. If they acquire the property with the intent of just holding that property for a short period of time, maybe doing some improvements on that property and then reselling the property, technically that property doesn't qualify for like-kind tax deferral under Section 1031. I've always maintained that there's probably a little laundry list, maybe 12 or so items that come into play when determining whether when a property's made that transition from being an investment or business use property to something that is now, or at least a part of it has now become a dealer developer type property. So I think I would just take the example when somebody acquires a piece of bare land, that it's in a good location, that at some point in time has some development potential. They have made a buy it with the idea that they are going to use it for some purpose, for an agriculture purpose, for instance, or that at some point in time, they may want to put some other business on that location because of location. But at some point in time, they think, wow, there's some development potential here. Let's put in some curbs and gutters. Let's put in some roads or streets. Let's pave it. Let's get utilities stubbed off to each of the lots. Let's subdivide it, first of all, into half acre lots or whatever the dimensions are going to be. I think the more of those types of improvements that are made to the property, the more it begins to look like, you know, that property's now changed from an investment type property or business use property to a development type property. And then you get into once that occurs, then you determine a lot of other things can happen, not the least of which is the fact that how many lots will the taxpayer sell off in any given year? I mean, if they're maybe selling one lot every couple of years, maybe they've conveyed a lot to their kid, their children, or lots to relatives or friends or whatever. That may not be a big problem, but when they've got a sales office out there on site and they start selling off lots in multiples, then I think that there's even more of an argument can be made that that's now development property and that they're not eligible for 1031 treatment on those sales. So it's more art than science. I admittedly, like you say, it's the line's pretty fuzzy. Taxpayers have to be really careful about that. So do their advisors.
Absolutely. Well, Max, if folks want to connect, if they want to learn more, what's the best way?
Hey, they can just go on the website, www.accruit.com, or they can contact 800-237-1031. One of our client service people would be available on that number. And I'm always available on that number too. You can go on the website and you can get my contact information. We're always happy to answer questions. I probably answer a lot more questions about 1031 exchange transactions than actually facilitating exchange transactions, because they're not for everybody. And sometimes they don't qualify, but we'll help them figure that out and get them steered in the right direction at least. And I love doing exchanges. I'm still doing them after 40 plus years. So that gives you some indication of how much I like doing the job.
Fabulous. Well, Max, love the perspective. And for the listeners at home, definitely connect with Max at accruit.com. The link will be in the show notes. And in the meantime, have an awesome rest of your weekend. Go make some great things happen. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow.